closer.
I'm Angela Durkin. I am the Chief Operating Officer for Maersk Drilling, which is a mid-sized offshore drilling contractor. Well, I make sure that our rigs are operated in a safe and efficient manner and deliver service to our customers.
Hi, everybody. It's Todd Conklin, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. Hey, that was a nice way to start this this episode of the podcast. I'm really excited about this episode. You just heard Angela Durkin, who's the COO, Chief Operating Officer of Maersk Drilling. And Angela's going to talk to us a lot about the way Maersk Drilling thinks about, manages, operates, handles, facilitates, creates safety while they do work in lots and lots of interesting places. Because offshore drilling, by definition, sort of qualifies for lots and lots of interesting places. I think you're going to really enjoy this podcast. It was a great conversation. We really, really had a great conversation. But before we do, let's talk a little bit about life as we know it in the world. Golly, it's I cannot believe that we're already into the month of July. I don't know where the year flies by to, but it flies by. It's the craziest thing. It just you really know. I mean, if you haven't thought about this, the one resource that you can't make more of is time. And so it clearly is a very dear and precious resource to us, and it just zooms by. But maybe that's because every day's kind of fun and kind of exciting. I had the best time seeing so many of you guys at HPRCT this year. I had a phenomenal time, just a phenomenal time in the workshops I did with Decker, and those were really fun and got to see a lot of people. It was that was interesting. There's no question about that. That was an interesting way to spend time. Lots of very passionate people were involved in the discussions around you know, what the future holds for us. It was sometimes people got upset and sometimes people were almost overly happy, but either way it worked out perfectly. And of course, if you haven't picked up a copy of Workplace Fatalities, kind of a discussion on new understanding of how fatal accidents and serious events happen in the workplace, that would be a great thing for you to pick up as well. I think you would dramatically enjoy that. And by dramatically enjoy, I don't really know what that means, but that's more enjoyment than normal enjoyment, which it could or could not be dramatic. Either way, that works as it goes. Other than that, man, the world in which we live, this world of sort of stable systems, of understanding variability, of managing high-risk operations, it doesn't seem like the work we do is getting there's not less of it. It seems like there's only more and more of it. And so that's good, I guess, because if job security is how we value what we do, then I'm pretty certain we got plenty of job security ahead of us. That I can guarantee. Other than that, the summer's going to pretty much tear away and be pretty interesting. I'm personally going to go on a little vacation, so I'm very excited about that. I'm taking the entire gang, and we're going to go starting in Amsterdam and ending in Munich on a river boat cruise, which sounds I think it'll be fun. We've done it before, and I can almost guarantee you that I have a good time. It's a great way to, it's like your hotel moves and you don't have to. So every morning when you wake up, you're in a new town and you can poke around all day long and then come back and your hotel moves to another town the next day. And so every day it's like a moving, and they're very nice to you. They make sure you have all the stuff you want. It's a high service, high quality, lots of very, very exciting things going on there. So let's talk a little bit about this podcast, because there's much we can share on this. Angela is an electrical engineer by education, but she's been in drilling ops for a long time and moved into the COO position, which is a very nice position. And Maersk has, I've spent a couple of days with them. I thoroughly enjoy them. They're a wonderful company. I mean, there's lots going on and great personality and laugh and have fun and take everything serious. That part's really great. They've got some 20 plus rigs, like 26 or something. I mean, they have lots of rigs all around the world. And as you know, if you're on the oil and gas side of the house, the world has dramatically changed in that arena. Where once there was a super high cost or high value on the resource that they extracted, that value has dramatically decreased due to lots of kind of geopolitical pressures. And that's really changed the way this industry's had to look at operations. And I think that's a very interesting thing to think about. And Angela really talks to that as we go through this podcast. It's very interesting. We were sitting in a resort outside of Copenhagen, and we were in a little lounge kind of in the front of the hotel. So you're probably going to hear some lounge noises, but that kind of makes it realistic. That's not a problem. And if you hear people talking, unless you speak Danish, that's not going to be that big of a deal. You won't be able to. I had no idea. I'm pretty sure they were saying how beautiful we were. That's kind of what it felt like. But we sit down. I asked her to talk to me for a couple of reasons. One is I really, really like the way Angela thinks about safety. She really sees it as a capacity. And that sort of leads me to the backstory, which is kind of the reason I interrupted Angela after she introduced herself. I was at a conference, I guess probably maybe a little more than a year ago, and the conference was great. I mean, it was really interesting, but it was spinning really in a direction towards fixing the worker. It was I thought I'm going to spend the entire day, because I was speaking kind of towards the end of the day, and I had a pretty good amount of time, but everybody that spoke before me pretty much told kind of elaborate stories of how the worker needed to be more careful. And you guys know, because we talk about this a lot, the traditional view of safety is that the worker is the problem, and so therefore we must constrain the worker somehow and tell them either what not to do or tell them what to do, you know, at-risk behaviors or unsafe behaviors or safe behaviors. The conference was really moving in this direction towards, you know, people would be safer if they were just more careful. And then Angela came up, and I'd never met her, so I had no idea. And she proceeded to tell a story of their drops program at Maersk Drilling and how what they really can manage with great certainty is the red zone, getting in and out of the red zone. And then she said, you can't really manage drops. Drops aren't what we manage. We do our best to look for drops. And she talks in this conversation about some elaborate hazard hunts and how they've gone out to look for things that'll drop. But that's important, but it's not sufficient. That what you really manage is the rig's ability to have a drop without consequence to people for safety and health, but also consequences to operation. And so her conversation almost immediately turned the meeting, you could kind of feel it, away from the worker is the problem towards the worker is the problem solver. And what's so interesting about that is by the time she ended up finishing her presentation, she had pretty much sold the entire crowd on the idea that the best resource they have to provide safety on a drilling rig or drilling ship in this case were the people who actually do the work. And I got to follow her, which was perfect. I mean, it was the perfect entree for what I had to say. I went in and, you know, told a couple jokes and showed a couple slides, and it went swimmingly. It was a great day. Got to finish up. I was the last guy, and the conference was really, really fun, and I was done. And I was walking off the stage, and Angela came up to me and said, I want to talk to you for a moment. And I said, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk to you. And we started talking, and she told me the story of really how they're looking at safety programmatically across the entire operations at Maersk Drilling, and we really resonated. And she said to me, I'd love to have you come and talk to my guys. If you can come out and talk to my people, that would be really fun. Would you like to come to Copenhagen? Well, the only answer to that question, if you live in the United States, is yes. If you haven't been to Copenhagen before, you should go. Denmark is really fun. They have great restaurants. They really care about food. It's a fun, fun place to go. The people are hilarious. It's a great. It's expensive, but it's a great place to go. But I said, yeah, I'll go, but the airport's kind of confusing to me. And she said, oh, yes. The Copenhagen airport changes every day, and that's very true. It's always a different place because the airport's growing, and really Copenhagen itself has become quite an active center of industry, and there's just a lot going on there with the pharmaceutical industry, and some of you that listen will have connections to Copenhagen. Also, shipping is gigantic there, and then drilling and completion, because Maersk is there. That started the ball rolling, and pretty soon I got a phone call from Christoph, who is the safety manager for those guys, and we started the discussion, and we went out and did some workshops. And it was very fun because it was reinforcing and it was exciting, and to a great extent, I left there really rejuvenated and very happy with what I saw. I saw a company under a tremendous amount of economic pressure, as they all are, really, really digging in and spending time and very, very significant and sparse resources to actually bring people together and talk about safety in a way that they would have done in a richer time for sure. But because this conversation was so important, they continue to do it in this time. And that sort of leads us to this interview. I think you're going to enjoy this immensely. Angela is she's really good. I mean, just the way she thinks about safety and the bridge she's put between sort of human performance, how humans perform in a technical system, and her background in engineering makes her a tour de force to think about when you think about safety. I think you're going to love this podcast. So sit back and relax. I'll shut up and we'll get started with the pre-accident podcast in Copenhagen. So we met at the DROPS conference, and you impressed me greatly with your guys' approach to dropped objects. A lot of people that are listening are going to think, wow, there's a whole conference on dropped objects. Yeah, it's that big of a problem. There's a whole conference. Tell me why you guys at Maersk are leaders in thinking about this problem differently.
Well, actually, it started when we had a couple of drops, a couple of heavy drops, one after another. The problem with the drops is that a dropped object is potentially a fatality to someone, because if it hits somebody, yeah, it could be a severe outcome. That's why we take it very seriously. So after we had a couple of drops, I have asked the organization to do a standstill and go on a hunt for finding potential objects that could drop. So for about 1 hour, on a certain day of the year, we decided to shut down operations, and everybody on my 23 operating rigs went out and looked for dropped objects.
How'd that go? That's such an interesting idea.
It was actually scary when they came back with the results, because they found so many that while I could have been proud for having run a really successful campaign because we found so many, I was really scared because we found so many. But when I looked at the results, there was this one rig that found almost nothing. And I thought, well, that is interesting. Why did all the others found hundreds of potential dropped object items with a lot of weight and a lot of hazard, and this rig didn't? And when I looked into it, I found out that they actually had developed, over time, a system where they systematically look for those potential dropped object hazards. And they had just a simple Excel spreadsheet where they had a rooster on who would be checking what when, and they based it on what are the most hazardous areas, and they would be checked a little bit more frequent over others. And that was rather simple. It involved everybody on board. But when I looked into their results over the others, it worked. And that then made me decide, why don't I do this on all of the rigs?
What a great idea. That's amazing. So what happens next? So you go out and do this hunt. You find all these potential dropped objects. Where'd you take it next? Because you couldn't stop there.
No, we couldn't. So what we did is we appointed one person that was looking into what this one rig had done, and took it and implemented it over the next 6 to 8 months on all of the other rigs. So we took drawings of the rigs, we developed zones, we looked into what are the areas that need to be checked more frequently depending on the type of the rig, and then we just rigorously followed the process, and it worked a treat.
And has it made a difference? I mean, do you feel a difference?
It made a huge difference. We came from probably having heavy dropped items of in the 40 to 50 in a year. In 2015, we went down to 26. And now this year, year to date, we have four heavy dropped object items year to date. So it has made a huge difference. But what it also has taught us is that why the jobs you cannot always 100% prevent, But you need to put the barriers in place to make sure that nobody gets hurt. So if we do have an operations that can result into something potentially dropping, we made sure that we implement a red zone and take people out of harm's way. So we have a secondary barrier in place now that prevents people from getting hurt.
So talk to me about the red zone and then build on to that to talk about the secondary barrier, because I think that defense in depth is really a separator for you guys. It's quite impressive.
Yeah, the red zones are important because there are certain times where we do perform work where we cannot have people in harm's way. One of the challenges that they vary, so sometimes a portion of a rig is a red zone, but sometimes it isn't. So we needed to find out a system that we could adapt where it was always clear to anybody when was this an area what is safe to pass and when this is an area that is not safe to pass. So we developed a system with simple physical barriers and signs which indicated on any entry point of a potential red zone whether this would be a red zone at any given point or not.
How do you, as a senior leader, how do you think about leading safety? The drops is a really great example. How do you think about leading safety for a really complex organization that actually manages really high risk all the time? I mean, what's your driving philosophy?
I think you need to listen to the people that are performing the work every day, because we as a management, we sit in the office and we are just too far away from what actually happens, and we need to really pay attention on what are we providing our people with to perform the day-to-day work. And I think that is really the important part, to make sure that we give them systems and tools that allow them to perform the work in a safe manner.
How do you make that happen? How do you get to listen to workers? Because you're pretty far away from workers. I mean, you're also on the shore. I mean, there's a lot of water between you, but you're also in the organization. You're far away. How do you ensure that you get that kind of information?
Well, I actually do go out and talk to them. But then, of course, that is only a very little snapshot in time. But one of the best examples is when we talked about how do we implement the red zones. I had all these fancy ideas sitting in an office. Oh, we could have flashing lights and here and there. And when I went to a rig, I passed that ideas on to the rig, and they said, now this is actually not so good. I rather have a physical barrier, because a physical barrier is a barrier to a person, and it means more for him to cross over, because now he physically has to change his body posture to go around this barrier than if it's just a flashing light. And I thought it was great input, and I forgot all about my flashing lights, and we went to physical barriers. And I think it's these kind of conversations that are important. But it's, of course, not just me having that. It's my whole team. It's a whole organization that is having this kind of conversation, and that message is been brought up to us so we can actually work with it.
What pushed you to see safety differently? What pushed you to have these kind of new ideas?
I think I was so frustrated. I'm 20 years in the industry, and I would say for many years when we had an incident, we would fire the guy in the coverall, and nothing ever changed, because we never really looked into what allowed the system or what system allowed this person to fail. I truly believe in human beings not getting up in the morning and deliberately wanting to do something unsafe and hurting themselves. This is normally not happening. If you see when somebody gets injured, that person normally had the best intention to do the job to his best ability, but yet something went wrong. And if you're not looking into what is the something that went wrong, we will never ever change the outcome. We can replace the worker, but if we don't change the system around it, then the outcome will be the same. It might just take a little bit longer because we might be a little bit more lucky.
How do you support the mid-level managers? I've always wanted to ask this question because you've got a really good feel for helping the guys in coveralls, but that pinch point in the organization are those middle-level guys. What do you do as a senior leader to help the rig managers or the OIMs, those kind of guys?
And that is absolutely true. It is, of course, a challenge. I always keep on saying nobody's born a safety leader. You need to equip the people with the training and the tools, and that is what we do. So we do have a lot of training. We do have a lot of tools, but we also back them up. So we have the Stop the Job program. If anybody on the rig sees something that they deem unsafe, they have 100% backup from myself. And I also make sure that I talk a lot about the customers, and I know that the customers have the same philosophy, so that the top management and the organizations are fully supporting that. So that means it takes a little bit pressure away from the middle management, because they do get a lot of pressure. They do get a lot of, you need to do this, you need to do this, you need to do it on time, but you also need to do it safe. And then they're sitting with all these mixed messages and how am I going to do and how am I going to deal with it? And we need to be absolutely clear with our message that safety always has to come first, regardless of anything else.
So where do you see the future? What interests you now? What are you thinking about now as a senior safety leader?
I think the hard part for us, if you look into the industry and if you look into the trend, first of all, we had a huge improvement in the safety statistics through processes and procedures. And then we looked into, and what can we design out? And now it's really the point where we need to look even deeper. We need to look into what are the surrounding circumstances that still allow an incident to happen. And then we get less incidents, which is a good thing. That means we also need to learn from those incidents that could have happened but haven't happened. And I think that is a muscle that we now need to train, and that is a huge change to the way how we work right now.
What advice would you give other leaders, leaders that maybe aren't in the same place you are in this thinking? What advice, what have you learned that you wish somebody would have told you that you can tell them?
If you ever see a root cause analysis that stops with not following procedure, you haven't gotten it. So keep on looking until you find something that tells you something about the surrounding systems and the surrounding situations. And never, ever blame the person.
As a woman in a male-centric job, how does that impact the way you manage safety? I mean, I think it's exciting.
That's an interesting question, and I don't think I manage it any other way than anybody else. And I grew up in a male dominated world already when I went to university. I have an electronics degree, so I'm an engineer by background. And when I studied, there were 360 men and 10 women, and we were the highest amount of women ever until that point. So I think I'm just used to it, and I'm just myself. I don't think that gender plays a role.
That's perfect. That's perfect. Anything else? Anything I'm missing? Anything that we should talk about?
I'm really excited to see that the industry is really picking this up now, and we finally understand that if we want to make a difference for our people, that we need to set them up for success. And I think that's our responsibility as managers to do so.
So what do you think? Isn't that a great conversation? Completely worth our time, I thought. She just had a lot of really good things to say. And it's different when an ops person says it than when we say it. You know what I mean? It means a lot of people have done a lot of heavy lifting in creating an understanding of the new view and working it from that direction. You know, the traditional view of safety is that people are the problem. And so somehow we must constrain people, right? She really has walked away from that and will tell you without a question that the people are the solution, and then gets really excited. I mean, she was really excited. I wish she'd have been there. You'd have seen by the fact that when she sent people out to fix the problem, what they did was fix the problem. And that's probably exactly the way this game should be played. I don't know. I thought this was a great, fun podcast, and I'm glad you were a part of it. It's excellent to have you on board, that's for sure. I hope you learned something new, because there was lots in there to learn. And if not, I hope it reinforced some things. Just give you positive vibes and sort of tell you, yeah, we're on the right track. We're moving in the right direction. That's what it's all about. So I hope you get what you need. That's important to me for sure. Learn something new every single day. You did today. Have as much fun as you possibly can, and for goodness sakes, be safe.